Translation. Thereafter, when the time was ripe, when Sujumna, the king of the world, was sufficiently old, he delivered the entire kingdom to his son, Puru Rava, and entered the forest. Please repeat. Thereafter. When the time was ripe, when Sujumna, the king of the world, was sufficiently old, he delivered the entire kingdom to his son, Puru Rava, and entered the forest. The purport is short here. According to the Vedic system, one within the institution of Varna and Ashram must leave his family life after he reaches 50 years of age. Pancha sad urdhvam vanam vrajet. Thus, Sujumna followed the prescribed regulations of Varnashram by leaving the kingdom and going to the forest to complete his spiritual life. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 9th canto, 1st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled King Sujumna Becomes a Woman. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvasesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Krupasindubhayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. Asking for all the blessings of all the Vaishnavas, specifically the disciples of Prabhupada, Tathavid Prabhu, Hare Krishna. The chapter is just when we thought the Bhagavatam was perhaps sometimes when people may be trying to read the Bhagavatam, it looks like monotonous, it's going on. But when you come up to a chapter like this, there's all excitement. There's all excitement that how someone can change from one sex to the other. You think, wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. So in this chapter, it describes how Sujumna becomes a woman and how the dynasty of Vaivashvata Manu was amalgamated with the Soma Vamsa. And Sukadeva Goswami, he describes how Sujumna, he became transformed into a woman, and he accepted Buddha, the son of the moon, as her husband, and they had a son named Puru Rava, and that's how the amalgamation of the two dynasties were there. So by the grace of Lord Shiva, Sujumna received the benediction that he could live 1 month as a woman, 1 month as a man, and then he regained his kingdom. In today's verse, we saw that three more sons were there, apart from Puru Rava, that Utkal, Gaya, and Vimal. And they were religious. And now, finally, at the end, King Sujumna, he leaves his kingdom, and he leaves it to the oldest of the sons, interestingly, the oldest of the sons, Puru Rava. And he takes to the order of Vanaprastha. I think yesterday Maharaj was dwelling on this topic. His verse was about this, the fact that now sex change is quite common. We didn't hear much about it. The Bhagavatam has been speaking about it since time immemorial. But in the 50s, 60s, you may hear about it. And now even within the dictionary, there is male, there's three sexes, male, genders of, three genders, male, female, and transgender. So they have three even. Just try and figure out what's going on. I remember in the 70s, which was quite unusual at that time, but there was someone who joined, and they were going to live in the ladies' ashram, but then we realized that they had changed their sex. So there was nothing wrong in them practicing Krishna consciousness, but how to live in the cottage with the ladies. So there was a problem there, because they changed in that way. I don't know how we solved it, but I think he moved. And there was even one acharya was reminding me, there was one brahmachari who lived for many years in the ashram, and then he left. And then we saw him a few years later, and he was fully dressed as a woman. Fully dressed as a woman. So it's not that it's out there somewhere, it's actually within the institution, this principle as well. It's an interesting point here. And the GBC, in discussing this, there was a big discussion many years ago, 2 years ago, I think Mother Urmila Gopi Parna, they wrote a paper, it was never published. They were still looking at it, and just this year in Italy, we started looking at this whole topic and discussion as what is our response to these issues, because these are real issues now, and you hear about them all the time. So, and I think they took on board Ravindra Sarup. Everyone was, Shonaka had come from Oxford, so it was a whole academic principle as well, and they looked at many aspects of it. And you know, the real principle was that everyone is welcome to come and take up Krishna consciousness. Everyone is welcome, regardless of who you are. Where the boundaries lie is what the discussions would be, and I think the paper would be published shortly. Where does it affect things, initiations, where does it go? In essence, it was that we welcome everyone. At the end of the day, everyone is beyond gender at the end of the day, and that looking at Mahaprabhu's principle of that. But still, because we are embodied, where do the boundaries lie? So that was the discussion on that principle. There was a great psychologist and psychic in America. His name was Edgar Cayce, and he worked at a time when he would, because he was a psychic, he could go into, anyway, this is the psychologist, he could go into other people's bodies, and he could tell who they were or what they were doing, or he could tell them what illnesses they had, and so it was very famous, Edgar Cayce. So once someone who was homosexual said, how is it that I'm in this condition? So Edgar Cayce said that in a previous life, because he didn't believe in reincarnation as well, actually, interestingly, Edgar Cayce. But he said, actually, in some previous life, you were mocking those that were eunuchs and so on. So in this life, you have become this, interestingly. And he also speaks about the fact that someone else said, how am I in this condition? And he speaks of the fact that he said 10 lives you were a man. And all of a sudden now, for you to become a woman is not possible. So you've gone in between. In between, he said. So, I mean, these are all his case studies. We're not saying this is the Bhagavatam. But it's interesting phenomena. And the Vedic astrology speaks about these principles as well, that we're not fully male or fully female. There's always a part of us which is 60-40, 70-30, 80-20, 90-10. But it says that unless, if it's too much to the one side, it's actually not good. It's actually not good. It should be 70-30 in that region. Astrology speaks about that balance between male and female within one body. So it's interesting how people are changed. Of course, here we have King Sajumna, which is not just the change that you may have nowadays. People have gender changes. There's, you know, everything is synthetic. So much surgery, it's all synthetic. So you can have a variety of changes. But here, King Sejuna actually, not only did he change into a woman, but he conceived children. So this is a real change. So this is interesting in that way. Yesterday I was speaking to Sutta Prabhu, and we were speaking on this, that that there are so many other examples within the Puranas and Vedas of all of these things. One interesting one, of course, is the story of Sikandi. Sikandi, Mahabharata, is now very watched by everyone in India or anywhere in the world. And the original series was 50. It became so popular, it got to 100, it got to 200, and now they've gone to nearly 300. So popular. It's a good Mahabharata, actually, because Krishna is very much portrayed as the personality of Godhead. The stories are differing because they have to differ to make it different from all the others, but the portrayal of the philosophy is very, very clear. And right now going on in the Mahabharata is Sikandi coming right in front of Bhishma, because he is who he is, and Bhishma's laying down his arms. So it's interesting that that story is there within the Mahabharata. And the story is there, of course, that Bhishma, in order to get Vichitavira, queens, he goes to the swayamvara of Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. And of course, he wins the swayamvara. But the problem is with the oldest of the three princesses, Amba, because she's already given her heart to the king, Salva. So when Parshuram, when Bhishma finds it out, he says, no, okay, you go back and you can marry Salva, not a problem. But Salva, he rejects her on the basis that already Bhishma has taken you. So now you marry him instead. So she's gutted. So she comes back to Bhishma, and because Bhishma says, my vow is this, his famous line, so he, of course, rejects her. So Amba, of course, then decides that I must get even with him. And there's a whole story which continues. And then, of course, she approaches Parshuram to tell Bhishma, you must marry me. So, of course, Parshuram, he wants to get even with the Kshatriyas. So he comes to him, and they have a huge battle on at Kurukshetra, actually. But of course at the end, Parshuram, he becomes defeated, and he lays down his weapons and he says to Amba, I can't do anything. I can't defeat this Bhishma. So anyway, Amba then carries on in austerities, and she's cursed and benedicted. Half her body is cursed because she's performing these austerities, and Ganga appears, and Ganga says, what benediction you want? And she says, I want to kill Bhishma. So of course, Ganga is she's the mother of Bhishma. She says, no, I'll curse you instead. I'll curse you to become a river instead. So she gets half cursed. But then she performs great austerities, and Lord Shiva gives her a benediction. And he gives her a benediction that in your next life you'll become a man. And so she immediately enters the pyre and to move on to the next life. And King Drupad, his queens, had no children. So they had worshipped Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva had benedicted them that they will have a daughter who will later become a man. So, interesting. That the whole story is very interesting. And then, of course, Drupad, when he has this daughter, he announces that we have a son. And he dresses this girl as a son. And of course, it gets even more interesting that when finally it comes to marriage, they look for a princess to marry. And he has such faith in the words of Lord Shiva that you will change into a man in due course of time. But of course, he still hadn't changed. she hadn't changed. So Sikandini eventually marries Hiranyavarma's daughter. But of course the daughter tells the father, this is not a man, it's a woman. So of course Hiranyavarma begins a battle with Drupad. He said, what are you doing? What's going on? So of course Sikandini becomes very upset with the whole scenario, laments, and she walks off to kill herself from this whole scenario. And she meets a yaksha, and yaksha's name is Stuna. And Stuna, he offers his manhood. And he says, later on I'll take it back. So it's not just King Sujumna, it's all variety of places. Quite interesting, all of these things that go on within it. And of course, Sikandi then, he returns as a man, and Drupad is very happy, yes. Lord Shiva's benediction was true. And Hiranyavarma is of course happy as well, that now, you know, it's a man, it's not a woman. But of course when Kuvera, who's in charge of all the yakshas, finds out what Stuna has done, he curses both of them to remain as they are. So now, Stuna remains as a woman and Sikandi remains as a man. And of course, finally Kuvera being appeased, he gives the benediction that whenever Sikandi he dies, then Stuna he will regain his masculinity. So that is the principle which is given there in the Mahabharata, and that happens of course at the end when he does die. So the next part of the purport and verse is all about the Varnashrama, and specifically Vanaprastha here in today's verse. And you know, in our society, three of the ashrams are very well defined. The Brahmachari ashram is well defined, the Grihastha is well defined, and Sannyas is well defined. But Vanaprastha is not so well defined, as Jayadvaita Swami often, when he gave a seminar upstairs here many years ago on Vanaprastha and the meaning of it. Because no one really has taken Vanaprastha. We have everyone in the ashrams of the Brahmacharis, the Grihastha and the Sannyasis. But Vanaprastha, it's not defined, it's very grey. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Bhakti Aloka, he says these are the following responsibilities of the ashram, where he says, Bhikshura dharma shamohimsa tapa iksha vanokshaya. He says the main religious duties of sannyas are to be equal and non-violent. Whereas vanaprastha, the main duties are austerity and philosophical understanding of the difference between the body and the soul. And he goes on to say, of course, in that verse, that the main duties of a householder are to give shelter to all living entities and to perform sacrifice. And finally, he says, the main duties of the brahmachari is to be engaged in the service of the spiritual master. It's interesting that Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhakti Loka. So he goes on to say that vanaprastha is the gradual rejection and separation from the marital arrangements. So he speaks on this, of how that is. And sannyas, of course, is the final rejection of all worldly ties, family and social. Prabhupada, in a letter that he wrote to some devotees about book distribution, he says the following. He says, in 1954... I left my home, and for 5 years I lived as a vanaprastha here. So I think this must be in Vrindavan. Sorry, he says, I lived as vanaprastha here and there. And then, in 1959, I took sannyas. And he goes on to speak about the time that when he was a vanaprastha, he did a lot of his work, his translation work. So he was the example that for 5 years, when he left, Ideally, of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it divides the four ashramas into equal amounts, 25, 25, 25, and 25. 25 years is the brahmachari life, 25 years is the grihastha, 25 is the vanaprastha, and then 25 finally is the sannyas. The principle the Veda speaks about of today's topic, vanaprastha, is that the husband and wife should retire from active family life. Now, the age is a difficulty because people didn't become brahmacharis from 5 to 25. They maybe have joined at 30. So all the ages have changed in our society of when people do certain things. And they're meant to, as Prabhupada says often, to leave their grown children to care for themselves and to look after, as Prabhupada did, they looked after Prabhupada's wife, the three boys. The vanaprastha, they're meant to focus on the real purpose of prema pumartaman, how we can achieve love of Krishna. And in this way, even vanaprastha, Prabhupada speaks about that at the age of 75, they should really be completely dedicated to the personality of Godhead and be prepared for the final test. But unfortunately, in today's society, it's very, very different. As people get older and older and older, instead of retiring, people are still considering how they can enjoy it to the last moment. So vanaprastha is a difficult scenario when we speak about the modern retirement, because people are finding newer means to beautifying, strengthening, and pampering the body until it finally collapses. And the Gita describes this as something which is demoniac. What's the nowadays? I think in the UK you retire, ladies at 60. Ladies 65? Men is 65. Have they changed to 70? They're working because of the pension scheme. So ladies is now 55, 65. And men, Gurudas, as he said, 67. There we are. Changing to 67. So it's interesting that their concept is very similar. You know, when Prabhupada speaks about, in this verse, 51, vanaprastha. You go to the forest when you're 51. So they had it early. I think in Europe, people, they retire early. Their age is 55. They work less hours and they retire earlier. Here they work more hours and they retire later. So it's an interesting paradox. So that principle is also there. But what they found more and more is that as people retire and people are living longer and longer, they don't know what to do with people. Because previously people would die quite early. And now people are living into the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s. So hence, so many care homes are coming up everywhere. Because the culture of... generally people are living by themselves. So there's a big problem for the governments, because they have to fund it. At least in this country. So huge dilemma they have. The pension schemes haven't worked. Now people are getting older. They're still living. How are we going to look after them? So all the care homes are increasing and increasing and increasing. But what they've found is that as people get older, they get more depressed. So there's Prozac. It's the number one thing that they prescribe. People are more and more... why? Because people are so active, all of a sudden they don't know what to do. You know, everybody waits for retirement, but when they retire, they don't know what to do. So depression sets in. And people are losing their hair. So after Prozac, there's another drug called Rogaine, and that's for trying to regain the hair. Well, we don't have that problem, obviously. But they're thinking, well, you know, I'm getting older, but how do I keep the hair black, and how do I keep it there even? And then finally, the third thing, so apart from Prozac, and Rogain, the final, the third one big drug that they have is because as people are getting older and older, they're losing their vigor. So finally, they came out with the drug called Viagra. As the third thing, that as you retire, this is what you will need. Into your 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s. You'll still be very brilliant, very agile. There'll be a sex drive. So these aspects, they've said that especially Viagra has revolutionized society. This is their comment in the Science Journal, that since the invention of the birth control pill, this is the next miracle. How we can enjoy. So with the birth control pill, people could enjoy unlimitedly. And now, even if you lose your virility, you can still enjoy because there is Prozac. All the way. 50, 60, 70, 80. Old men become young once again, is what they say. So often in Krishna consciousness we may be asking and we say how you can grow old without Viagra. And that's our formula, how you can grow old without Viagra. And it's very simple, as we say, because instead of taking Viagra, you instead go via Agra to Vrindavan. Via Agra. Via, because that's how you go to Vrindavan, via Agra. Because often somebody said to me, I'm going to Vrindavan via Agra. I said, okay. It's interesting. So that's our formula of how you don't need to take Viagra as you get older. Instead, you go and retire in Vrindavan. And as Prabhupada said, all my temples, they are Vrindavan. And you know, retiring is a difficult thing. Not just materially, but even when we look at the Ramayana. When we look at the Ramayana, Dasharath, when he decided, okay, tomorrow I'm going to give up my throne and I'm going to make Ramachandra the king. And he thought about this. This is the Sri Vaishnavacharyas, they comment on this. They said that he was thinking, okay, now I'm going to tell all my ministers and all my council that this is what I'm going to do. And I'm sure when I tell all of them that I'm stepping down tomorrow, they'll all say, no, no, don't do it. Don't do it. You are, how can the kingdom go on without you? We cannot survive without you, King Dasharath. So he was thinking this is what everyone will say. So he announced, I have made a decision that tomorrow I will step down. I will take Vanaprast. And Lord Ramachandra, he will become the king. So I am going to step down, everyone. And everyone looked at him and they said, Hari Bol, well done. Great. When are you retiring? So he was shocked. He was shocked. He said, what's this? I thought all my council, all my ministers, they love me. But no one is objecting that I should retire. And the Sri Vaishnavacharyas, they speak about the fact that at that moment, Dasharath, he held his intelligence. Instead of letting his mind decide, he called his intelligence to look at it. And he then, at a moment's notice, realized, Shishirada Gokula Nandaki. At a moment's notice, Dasharath, he once again caught hold of his intelligence. And he realized, no, it is time for me to step down. I have to step down. And anyway, Lord Ram, he's the personality of Godhead. So even retiring within the Vedic concept wasn't as easy as it sounds, Vanaprastha. And what to speak of today's society? You know, people who are in high positions, how do you step down? Very difficult. So in this country, they have a nice system that when you are a member of parliament, and when you do step down, because you've been running the country, so you go from the House of Commons and you go into the House of Lords. So you don't run the country anymore, but you look at policies. You don't have a say in the daily running of a country, and you don't have the power to do that, but you have a say in the policies that the new government or whatever government is making. So even they realize that if we don't do something with those that are going to retire, there'll be great difficulty for the present government, because they know everything about the government. So they had a system of how individuals move on, and we call this in ISKCON succession, that someone will succeed us. And in the corporate world, they say the first duty of anyone who becomes a CEO of a company is that he should be thinking, who will I be succeeded by? Who will succeed me? So it's interesting for all of us, whoever we are, whatever we're doing, that we should be thinking, who will succeed me? Because we will not be here forever. And we have to, whatever knowledge and skills that we have to give it to someone else who will succeed us. So, from that story of the House of Commons, Dasharath, it's a good introspection for us as well. Who will succeed us in what we're doing? Prabhupada in Calcutta says the following in 1972. So the Vedic system is that one should accept the order, sannyas order, at the last stage of life. Suppose one lives 100 years. He should become brahmachari student for 25 years, then a married man for another 25 years. And after 50 years, pancho urvadam vanam vrajet, he should accept vanavas. Vanavas means vanaprast, vana, from van, one who has gone to the forest, vanaprast. So then, when he is prepared, he should take sannyas. The whole institution is meant for sattva, sattva samsudhi. So one has to purify his existence. Otherwise, he does not purify his existence, then he will have to transmigrate from one body to another, and that is material existence. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he elaborates on this when he says, na ham vipro na cha narapatir. Na vaisha na sudra na varni na nagriha pratir na vanusti yatirva gopi bartha padakamalur das das anudasa. Where he says that I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatri, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Sudra, I'm not a Brahmachari. Grihastha vanaprasthani, who am I? Gopi bartha padakamalur das das anudasa. That I am the eternal servant of the servant of the servant of Lord Krishna. This is a very important principle, that all of us remember that principle, that we are the servants of the servants. So Vanaprast is all about preaching. It's all about preaching, actually. Our whole life is about preaching, but especially Vanaprast is all about preaching. Mark Twain, we have a famous saying next door. And you might remember that. It says that there are two most important days in your life. The day you were born and the day you find out why. So actually, for all of us, for every devotee, there is a purpose. And that purpose very much is to carry Krishna to those who do not have Krishna in their lives. To carry Krishna to those that do not have Krishna in their lives. Now that doesn't mean that you need to be a big preacher. It's really about remaining happy and satisfied in whatever preaching that we do. And everything that we do is actually preaching. Whether we're worshipping the deity, whether we are teaching in our schools, or whether as we have our preachers that go out directly. The summer tour is on. As we know, a group of devotees have been traveling throughout the country, visiting all our temples right from the top. How many have we visited now? Manchester, Scotland, Southampton, Central London. So a group of 10, I think they had 30 devotees that went all the way. And it's the wonderful formula of Harinam, book distribution, and festivals. Simple formula, and prasadam, of course, distributing prasadam. So that's been going on in the summer tour that we had. That's very wonderful that we've had that. Everyone's going out. But whatever we're doing, that's preaching. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had an interesting point on preaching. And he says as follows. One who takes personal instructions to each and everyone does more for others than the platform speakers do. Generally, whatever platform speakers say cannot solve the problems of everyone in the audience, nor can it always benefit every individual. A person's defects are better rectified in a private tutorial class or private coaching than in hearing lecture in a school or college. Therefore, those who instruct particular persons separately can award them something more permanent. So it's interesting, he's saying, apart from platform speakers rather than speak, he said one-to-one is an amazing thing. And especially because you can do some, and that's our mentorship system. It's all about that, that how you can instruct, you can correct an individual, but in masses you can't do it. You can guide someone. So Bhaktisiddhanta speaks on that very much, that one must have life to preach, as he says. Dead man cannot preach. Meaning, if you're preaching, then you have life. You know, if you go to the hospital, they have the ECG, electroencephalograph, and that goes up and down. It goes up and down. And when it's going up and down, it means you're alive. But if it's flat, it means you're not alive. You're dead. So, you know, each one of us, you know, in our lives, there may be ups and downs. But that means we're alive. We're alive. If life was just steady, like electricity, it would mean we're dead. So this saying of Bhaktisiddhanta is interesting. That one must have life to preach. Dead man cannot preach. So I thought an interesting analogy with the ECG that you can pretend. And our main principle of preaching is really to give the holy name to everyone. The holy name of Krishna. And in the 11th chapter of the Gita, in the 54th verse, where Krishna's saying to Arjuna that only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am. Three interesting words which I use are agyatum, dristum and pravishtum. In that verse. And really relating that to the holy name today, I thought was interesting, that gyatum, that that we can understand Krishna and we can understand that he is non-different from his holy name, gyatum. The next stage is drishtum. That if we first understand that Krishna and his holy name are different, in due course we will see that Krishna is present in his holy name, drishtum. And finally, pravishtum. That you will be able to enter into Krishna's pastimes through his holy name. So interesting principle there of these three words, gyatum, drishtum and pravishtum. In the Ajamil story, so many aspects are given about but the holy name. But two interesting things about the holy name which I mentioned. First one is bhakti udoy, which means that the holy name awakens our devotion. You know, all other processes of atonement, they simply nullify the sins that we may commit. All of us commit so many sins, and there's in the Bhagavatam, there are so many processes of atonement. But only the chanting of Krishna's holy name, not only does it nullify the sins, but it also awakens our bhakti or devotion. That's what it does. Na nishkrite brahmavadibi yatahari naam tad utamashloka pralambakam. Which means that generally, processes of atonement have limitations. So whatever you do is never sufficient in atonement. It says if you committed these sins, do this, 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 but it's never enough. But the process, when you chant the holy name, it awakens our love for Krishna. There's a story of a businessman which is given that he was selling contaminated ghee. So the king, he caught him and he said, you're going to be punished for this. You have three choices. Either you give 10,000 gold coins, or you have 50 whiplashes, or you drink 10 kgs of ghee. You have three choices. So he thought about it. He said, 10,000 gold coins? I don't want to give that away. He said, whiplash, you don't fancy that. But he said, ghee, wow. Drinking ghee is a great thing, isn't it? So he said, I'll choose the last one. 10 kgs of ghee. So they started giving him ghee. 1 kg, 2 kgs. And they got to 5 kgs. His stomach was, because he was very happy. Ghee, beautiful. Oh, but 5 kgs. He thought, oh, it's all too much. I can't take it anymore. So then they said, well, then you'll have to have 50 whiplashes now. He said, all right, let me try that one instead. So they started whipping him, you know, and they got to 35. Finally, they got to 40. He said, I can't take it anymore. Then they said, oh, well, you'll have to go to the next one, 10,000 gold coins. He said, oh, yeah, okay, I'll give that. So process of atonement are like that. They say, just do a little bit, but you end up doing everything in the end. But here in the story of Ajamil, it says that Bhakti Udoy, the chanting of Krishna's holy name, it awakens our devotion. And finally, another thing that's given in there, many things are given. 8 effects of the holy name are given in the Ajamil story. But the second one is called Swato Natak, which is that the holy name of Krishna is even effective in ignorance. And if we look at the story of Ajamil, 4 things happen in the Ajamil pastime. Miro Mano Hare Nam, that first of all, Ajamil, he chanted the holy name helplessly only at the time of death. He never chanted any other time. Secondly, he was calling out the name of his son and not the holy name. Thirdly, Ajamil never followed the 4 regulative principles. And fourthly, he did not know anything about the glories of the holy name. So 4 things in the Ajamil pastime. So now when we look at our lives, and still, at the end of his life, he achieved perfection. Imagine, just by once chanting the holy name of Krishna. So, you know, we're not only, look at the difference for all of us. That not only are we chanting the holy name throughout our lives, but if we look at the 4 things, that we chant the holy name throughout our lives. Secondly, we're calling out Krishna's name all the time. And we're realizing the glories of the holy names, and we're following the 4 regulative principles. How much more benefit will there be for us? How much more benefit there'll be for all of us? And the analogy in the Puranas is given that if your bhakti is simply a small flame, that when the winds of difficulties, they come, the flame will be extinguished. It gives the analogy in the Puranas of a story that your devotional life is, if it's a small flame, bhakti is very little devotion, that when the winds of difficulties, they come, it will be blown out. But it says that if your bhakti is very huge, like a fire, forest fire, even when the winds of difficulties come, they will fuel it, and your fire of bhakti will become even bigger. So we have to somehow make our fire of bhakti bigger and bigger and bigger. And finally, I think this was all about retiring. Ramananda Roy, when he was speaking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in what's famously known as the Ramananda Samvad, And it's interesting, that whole pastime, that Ramananda Roy, originally, of course, Ramananda Roy is two. He's one of the gopis, but at the same time, he's Arjuna as well. So previously, Arjuna was asking all the questions and Krishna was giving all the answers. But in the Ramananda Samvad, it's the opposite. That Krishna, in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is asking all the questions and Arjuna is giving all the answers. So Ramananda Samvad has that within it as well, interestingly. That principle is there. But of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is asking about what is the ultimate goal of life, and he gives a variety of reasonings and answers, of course. But he begins with this principle today, which is in today's verse, which is Varnashram. And he says, Varnashrama Charvata Purushena Parakpuman Vishnu Aradyate Pantha Nanyat Tatoshakaranam. That you can please the personality of Godhead simply by discharging your duties in Vana and Ashrama. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, he says that Eho Bahya, which is, this is external. Eho Bahya, this is external. Instead, he says, Aga Kahiyar, go further. And of course, he goes further, and he goes through Karma Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti, and finally coming to Prema Bhakti, and finalizing on that. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu becomes very, very happy, and the next day the conversation continues, and I'll end here with these questions that are asked by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Ramananda Roy, he answers it. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, what is the best education? And he says, devotion to Krishna. What is the greatest activity for a living entity? And he says, to be a servant of Krishna. What is the supreme wealth? And he says, love of Radha and Krishna. What is the greatest unhappiness? To not have the association of devotees. What is the highest liberation? And he says, the best jewel of all kinds of liberation is to develop love for Krishna. He says, what is the best song? So these are questions people may ask you in your life, isn't it? What are the best songs? Ramananda Roy is talking about it. He says, songs describing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And what is the most auspicious for all living entities? What is most auspicious? And he says, the association of a devotee of Krishna. What is the only thing we have to remember? Krishna's name, quality and pastimes. What is the only thing to meditate upon? The lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. And what is the best place to live? He says, where Krishna had performed his pastimes. What is the best thing to be heard? Descriptions of the loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And he says, finally, what is the only thing which has to be glorified? And he says, the names of Radha and Krishna. And then, of course, the famous part now is that Ramananda Roy is sitting there, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reveals that he is non-different here from Radha and Krishna. So that aspect is there as well. So these are some thoughts from this very interesting part of the Bhagavatam. And often we may, if we haven't read the whole Bhagavatam, we may wonder, wow, how did that happen? But Urmila Mataji this morning was just telling me that how whenever she speaks to children and she or youth, and she tells them about this part of the Bhagavatam, people become very excited. The Bhagavatam contains amazing things. So it's interesting. Guru Premanande. So we're wishing well all the devotees. They're traveling to Scandinavia tomorrow. So the summer tour is carrying on in Scandinavia tomorrow, and then they're carrying on from that time. We also have our Istagosti, everyone, not to forget. Tomorrow evening is our Istagosti between 7 and 9. All those that are here, resident, and others who are invited, between 7 and 9, we'll be looking at a variety of topics. So please do join us then. Go to Premanande.